A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We are one sleep away from the Fevertree Championships at the Queen's Club, where myself, David Law and Gigi Salmon currently stand on the tournament director's balcony looking over a glorious sight. It is centre court. It does have 14 of the world's top 30 here ready to play on it. And it will also have the returning Novak Djokovic after 8 years away and Andy Murray, who hasn't played a tennis match on the tour for 11 months. But he's going to be back here and we're going to hear from him. We're going to hear from Novak Djokovic here on the Tennis Podcast. Fantastic chats that Catherine Whittaker had with Andy and Gigi had with Novak today. It was media day. We've had a lot of fun going through and talking to all the players today, Gigi. The anticipation is building. And, I mean, there were so many crews today out there, weren't they? It was a lot happening.
It was like Television Alley along the south stand at the bottom. And each time a player arrived, they said, this centre court is amazing. When you ask for their memories of being here, why they like to come back here, they said, this is quite possibly one of the best grass courts in the world. And Novak Djokovic said, it's great, you can't practice on centre court. He said, it's so unique that you're not allowed out there until you actually play on it. Everyone's in a good mood, but they normally are before the tournament starts. We spoke to some people who've come through qualifying, so very, very happy. They're just relaxed. They love being out here on the grass. And it's a nice day, isn't it, media day, to speak to them. But they had a lot of work to do. When they came to us, though, it was a little bit more fun. So it was a lot of them quite serious interviews, but for us there was a little bit of a mix.
Yes, it was, and you're going to be hearing that little bit of a mix over the course of the next week. And if you monitor the tournament's social media channels at Queen's Tennis on Twitter and Facebook, Fevertree Championships on Instagram, you'll hear all these little interviews that Gigi and Catherine are doing over the course of the week, and we'll bring you the very best stuff here on the Tennis Podcast. I should also say, Fevertree is our new title sponsor. We mentioned it in the intro there. They are a fantastic company, a premium mixer drinks company, and joined forces with this tournament just a few months ago. And the place looks different. We have grey seats. We have beautiful Mediterranean blue backboards, Gigi. And we also have a brand new television partner, because Amazon Prime Video will be broadcasting this tournament in full in the UK over the next week. And they will be on air before play starts until the very last ball. They'll have highlights as well. So do make sure you tune in. Because another good reason, Catherine Whittaker of Tennis Podcast Parish is presenting it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's exciting times, isn't it? That Amazon coming into the tennis market to see what they're going to do. They're excited. They're putting a lot into it. I know Catherine's been rehearsing today, which is why I'm here with you, or why you're here with me. I'm not quite sure which way round it is, because I'm standing in for you for most of the week. I think I'm in for Catherine this evening. But exciting times for everyone and everything to do with Amazon.
Indeed. And so, Andy Murray is back. Gigi, I have to say, we're going to hear from him now, but I have to say, as much as we wanted to see him back, it feels like a bit of a surprise that he is back.
It does, because he admitted that he's only recently started actually playing tennis, and he's only been on the court in the last month, and he'd only started playing sets in the last couple of weeks. And he said all along he wouldn't come back until he was 100% ready. But you knew that the grass court season would be a pull. It's not a very long part of the season, but he so loves it here, this tournament, Wimbledon. He wanted to be a part of it, and he's decided that he is now ready to give it a go.
Let's hear from Andy Murray.
Well, Andy, it's great to have you back after 340 days away. Not that we've been counting or anything, but your decision to play here, the final one was made just half an hour before the draw. What clinched that decision for you?
Well, we kind of decided with my team the day beforehand, but just wanted to see how I felt the next morning when I woke up. So I played like practice sets, like back-to-back days, and just kind of wanted to be sure that I didn't wake up the next morning and feel bad, basically. And then I had another practice scheduled just after the draw, so got checked over by my team in the morning, and you know, was feeling pretty good, and that was it.
Five-time champion here, the scene of your first ever tour-level victory. How significant is it for you that it should be on this grass that you make your comeback?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, it's obviously nice. I was hoping that I was going to be able to play a bit sooner. I was planning on playing in Holland last week, but it just came a little bit too soon, you know, but obviously nice for me to play my first match back in, you know, 11 months here. Obviously, you know, love it here. Great memories, obviously, from, you know, winning the tournament and right back to when I was 18 as well. Seems like a long time ago, but yeah, nice to be back here.
At the start of the year, before you had the hip surgery, you put up a very powerful, thoughtful post on Instagram about how difficult it's been for you to be away from the sport and how you didn't realise how much you loved the sport until this period. How has your view of the sport changed and your relationship with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, obviously when things are going really, really well, you know, I guess, so it was, I think, 2016, you know, I'd had a really good year, and you know, you kind of expect that to just continue and keep going. There's lots of pressure at that time as well, and the expectations are very high, but the expectations that you have of yourself are also, you know, very high too. When you've been away from the sport for 11 months and you realise that it isn't, like in 2016, I thought that, you know, winning Grand Slams and being number one was the most important thing in my tennis career, whereas now I don't see that. I want that to still be the case. Obviously, I love to win Grand Slams and love to get to number one in the world. All tennis players would, but I just want to play tennis. Like, I love playing tennis. I've really, really missed it a lot. I've missed competing. You know, and that's the most important thing, like getting back to doing what I love doing. It's not, sport is about winning and losing, obviously, but it's not just about that. There's more to it. Like, this has been my life since I was, you know, pretty young. I made the decision to play tennis professionally when I was 15 years old. So it's been 15, 16 years of my life, and I've not been able to do that for, you know, play tennis for a year now. So it's been tough, but you know, you look at things a little bit differently, I think, as you get older and go through times like that. So I'm hoping that will help me through the comeback.
I don't want to dwell on the negative for too long, but obviously you said it there and in the post as well, you hinted at how tough it's been mentally as well as physically. How low have the lows been? Are there any particular moments you can recall feeling particularly sad and desperate about it all?
Yeah, I think like that time, like when I was over in Australia, you know, around the time when I posted that on Instagram, because, you know, it'd been 6 months at that stage where, you know, I hadn't played. I'd done, you know, lots of rehab. I'd been trying to avoid surgery. I'd been doing what had been recommended by my team and, you know, and the doctors, and I hadn't got to a point where I was able to compete, and, you know, I was obviously really down at that stage. And, you know, around that period, you know, there's lots of things that are written about you and said about you, and you don't always have the opportunity to respond to that. And that's also, like, I know we're very lucky, like, to be tennis players, very fortunate that we get to do this, like, as our job. But also, like I said, this is, like, it's a big part of my life. So when you're not able to do that, it is really difficult. You know, you can be very down, and it's hurtful when you read negative things about you as well. So at that period, I was pretty low. But then after I had the surgery and decided to have the resurgery, you know, it was all about, you know, let's get back on the court, let's do the rehab, let's do whatever it takes to get back out there, and, you know, train hard. You know, kept myself in shape the whole time. You know, I had like a week's break after I got back from Australia from the surgery. Went on holiday for a week, but pretty much since then, it's been, you know, a lot of hard work, a lot of, you know, a lot of training, a lot of long pretty boring days of rehab to get to this stage.
How much you've been following the sport? Have you been desperately watching most matches, or has it been painful for you to watch it too much?
I at the beginning I watched a lot, and then I didn't really. During the French Open, for example, I saw bits and pieces, but I didn't sit down and watch like loads of tennis, which normally I would have done. But you know, I've also during those tournaments, not like I've just been sitting at home. Like I've been, you know, I've been training and rehabbing and spending lots of time doing that stuff as well. So certainly at the beginning, I was watching a lot of tennis and really missing it. When I was less active, then as I started to progress, like with the rehab and stuff, I've kind of, well, I guess maybe been a bit more selfish and just kind of concentrated on myself and trying to get myself better rather than following the sport that much.
In the last year, we've seen two slams for Federer, two for Nadal. Is it kind of comforting to you to see two guys over 30 who have been through, obviously particularly Nadal, their fair share of injury woes, still dominating the sport?
Yeah, I think that's obviously nice. A lot of the, you know, the older players recently have been doing better. And I think a lot of it is down to the level as well. Like, they're two of the best players of all time. So providing they are healthy, you know, they're going to be able to compete and win the biggest competitions. And that's something that, obviously, over the last year, you know, Novak has been injured, Stan was injured, myself was injured. You look at someone like Del Potro as well, who's been through lots of different issues and, you know, is back now pretty much at the top of the game, you know, competing for the biggest events. So, you know, there's a lot of sort of case studies around just now that give you hope and optimism. And, you know, like I said, I don't know if this week I'm going to be playing well. I don't know if it will be in like 3 or 4 weeks' time, but maybe, you know, in 3-4 months when I've had a bit more sort of matches under my belt and a bit more training time, that hopefully I'll be able to get back to that level again.
You've become very accustomed to playing under a huge deal of pressure, I guess, internal and external. None of that now. Is there something a little bit liberating about that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously when I get on the court, I'll know. I still think I'll feel very nervous when I get back out there again, just because, you know, when you get out there, you want to perform and you want to play well. In terms of, you know, my expectations, like they are extremely low. I'm not expecting to win against Kyrgios. I don't think it'd be right to think that way after such a long time out. But yeah, obviously I want to be competitive. I don't just want to go out there and sort of roll over and, you know, play badly. Like, I want to try and play well and feel good on the court, but my expectations are pretty low.
Three Grand Slam titles, world number one, a knighthood, two Olympic gold medals, Davis Cup. What unfinished business do you feel you still have in this sport?
I don't know if it's so much like about like a result. I think kind of getting back and sort of after such a long time out, like I guess proving to myself that I can still, you know, still perform at this level. You know, I've said quite openly, like I'm quite motivated to play to have my daughters come along and watch. I would really like that. So at least, you know, before I stop, that maybe they would have an understanding of what it is that I did. So yeah, that's really it. I mean, it's not about winning major competitions. I would love to do that. And I still hope that that's the case, and I'll work extremely hard to try and do that. But it's not the most important thing.
Well, Andy, welcome back, and best of luck on Tuesday.
Thank you.
So, Andy Murray there, Gigi, with Catherine Whittaker. And, I mean, you know, that you can hear in his voice, can't you, how much it means to him to be back out here.
Absolutely. He's missed it, hasn't it? And I know all players will say to you that it has been nice to spend time. He has a young family to be off the court, but he really wanted to get back out here. He wanted to get better. He said all along that he knew he would play tennis again. We still need to work out at to what level he'll play tennis to. But David, how have you found it dealing with him as the media director here? You were escorting him around places, talking to him, because to me he seemed very relaxed. Is that the impression you've got from him?
It is. It's as if he actually believes now that maybe he is more or less ready. I mean, look, he's not 100%. He has said that. He has said he's got no expectations, really. But the difference in the look in his features on his face compared to a few months ago when he tried his comebacks before and he missed the US Open, and all those sort of times, he always looked as though he was just unsure of himself. And now I feel when I was watching him practice, he had practice sets with Cam Norrie, he's had others as well. It looks like he has trust in his body again, at least to do what he's asking it to do. The big question mark, though, is how will it react under the pressure of competition, both physically and mentally? And, I mean, to open up against Nick Kyrgios, I mean, goodness me.
It's actually quite good for him. There is something about Andy Murray. Nick Kyrgios cannot play against Andy Murray. He has so much respect for Murray. We know that there is between the two of them. But it's almost as though he respects him too much that he freezes. He's not the Nick Kyrgios that we've seen play sets and come through in the past against Roger Federer and other big names. I think it's going to be tough for Andy Murray. It's his first competitive match since Wimbledon last year. But I don't think it's the worst draw that he could have. He's got this perfect head-to-head against Kyrgios. And again, there's just some mental block in the Australian when he goes on court against Murray.
That's going to be interesting. Well, he'll be in town tomorrow, will Nick Kyrgios, practicing on the lawns of the Queen's Club. We'll look forward to seeing him, maybe able to get a chat with him at some point. We do hope so. Now, somebody else we have got to hear from today, Gigi, having a chat with a 12-time Grand Slam champion. He reached the final here in 2008, and he's back for the first time in 2010 when he won the doubles alongside Jonathan Erlich. And he spoke to Gigi, who asked him what it was like to be here.
It's great to be back. This is how comfortable I am. I haven't played this tournament for 8 years. Played finals back in 2008, won my first and only doubles title in 2010. But I've enjoyed every time I played here. It doesn't get much better than this, you know, seeing the fresh virgin grass of the center court where nobody's allowed to play before the first match on Monday. That's something that is very special in tradition of a British tennis, and something that you don't get to see anywhere else, and something that I truly respect and appreciate, the fact that you nurture the culture of the sport, and in this tournament you can sense that. So the field is very strong. It was always strong, especially in the last 10 years or even more. The top players are always taking part in this tournament because it's the best possible preparation for Wimbledon, but also this is a very prestigious tournament, so you want to win it. And for me, as probably many of the other top players on the tour, it's the first grass court tournament this season, so we all want to start off well.
I was thinking about this when I knew you were coming here, that this time last year you were getting ready for Eastbourne, you won
yes.
the title. The season then sadly came to a close at Wimbledon. Is it even possible to sum up the last 12 months, because you've been on a roller coaster ride in terms of injuries, suffering something you hadn't suffered before, and surge. I imagine the highs and lows have
yes.
been really big.
Yes, they were really big. My poor wife had to deal with that on a daily basis. But it is what it is, and it was a learning curve for me, to be honest, in the last 12 months especially, but also in the last two and a half years that... there has been a period through which I have carried my elbow injury, and I haven't been very familiar with the severity of this injury until I had to retire from Wimbledon quarterfinals last year, which was not a good feeling, especially because it's Wimbledon and I love that tournament, but also because I realized that I'm not able to hit the ball anymore, neither forehand nor serve. And so that was a sign to stop, and I took 6 months off, what I was told that is plenty of time to recover. But when I went back on the court preparing for new season, it started hurting again. So I went back on the court and managed to play Australian Open somehow, but with pain, and then I had to make a surgery. And then several months after that, throughout most of the clay court season, I had to deal with the consequences of a surgery. So, all of these new circumstances have affected you know, affected my game and several changes with the racket and you know, compensations with within the game itself. But you know, I try to look at it from a positive side. You know, this obviously had to happen, and as I said, it was a learning curve because it's a lesson that I need to learn. Probably the biggest one is to be patient, which was never my stronger side. And so I'm right now I'm more comfortable with everything, with those changes and grass. At the beginning of my career was not one of my favorite surfaces, but right now it's I feel comfortable on it and I look forward to compete.
Because I was wondering if it almost gets to the point where it's more mental than physical, because the pain is there and you get used to it to a point. But from a mental point, you're not starting from scratch, but maybe you're playing in first rounds when you're used to coming into the second rounds, and it's just building everything up. So at times mentally you just must have thought, oh, this is difficult.
Yeah, I mean, especially because you are not able to execute the game plan or the shots that you have been, you know, doing so well for so many years, and then you start to question everything, and it's such a you know, it's a game of such a fine margins, you know, and details, and you're by yourself on the court, so there's no one to really help you out on the court or substitute you if something goes wrong. You have to deal with all these emotions and pressures and anxiety and excitement and everything, but you know, as I said, you know, once what you know, the minor what seems like a minor change has a major effect on the game itself. So that's something that you have to accept and embrace, as I said, and deal with it and understand, you know, what is the strategy, what's the best way to deal with it. But one thing that I learned in this experience is that you can't create a strategy for something that you don't even know how it feels until you get to feel it. So so that's something that that I was trying to do it. I didn't know. And when I was 6 months off the tour, I was trying to strategize, okay, this is how I'm going to feel, this is what I'm going to do. I was trying to do millions of things, and then I came back on the court, the pain reappeared, and then just everything just dropped into water, and it just went to a not that great state of mind and surgery and all of these things. But It's the great thing about life is that it just allows you to grow all the time. Whether you're going to grow or not, it solely depends on you.
And you mentioned your wife, and you got to spend some time with your young family, and you recently had your second child. Are you good at being at home doing nothing, or was she very happy for you to leave the house and get back playing?
A little bit of both. I don't want to speak on, you know, on her behalf. But I think she's happy when I'm at home and, you know, helping with two children, because two kids is quite different from one kid, as many people would probably know that they're in that scenario and situation in life. But I loved my time at home without the racket. I missed that, to be honest. It was part of me that was asking for that throughout my career. Like, can I have a little bit more time, because the season is so long? And I got it, and I got to spend this valuable, unforgettable time with two children, and I would never change that for anything. And I miss them. Right now they're not with me, but they're going to be there for Wimbledon. And but my wife also thankfully supports me very much in tennis, and she also wants me to go out on the court and play.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So Novak Djokovic, Zizou, you were with him. He was sat right in front of you. What did you make of his body language?
Very relaxed. Novak Djokovic is a tough one because I think he does have quite a cultivated media image. I think he knows how to be in front of the media because he wants to give the persona that everything's fine and everything's relaxed. We know that over the past year it's been far from that. But he genuinely seemed, you get the sort of maybe only a couple of questions and you've got to be really, really quick. But when he sat down, his arm was over the side resting on the balcony ledge. He was very relaxed. He was laughing. He was chatting. When we asked him to do a little welcome video to the fans, he said absolutely no problem, and he just seemed even a little bit more relaxed. And I heard him go over to Amazon and he said, oh, I haven't had Amazon Prime and I don't have a smart speaker, but I'm learning about it. And again, as I say, it's a tough one with Novak Djokovic because I think he's very good when he has to be in this situation, but he did seem to be very, very relaxed. And it was just, as I say, if you just heard there, very interesting what he had to say about the ups and downs and dealing with it and getting to back where he is now.
Well, it's great to see Novak Djokovic back here. It's been a long time and it's going to be fascinating, isn't it? He is going to open up against John Millman of Australia, which is not an easy match. I mean, that is a guy who knows his way around a grass court, and so we'll get to see that in a couple of days' time on Tuesday.
Just laughing about John Millman because it was media day, as you mentioned, today, and we had a few questions, sort of quick fire questions, and one of them is, do you have a party trick? And maybe I shouldn't spoil it, but it involves his tongue and a snake. And I did ask him about facing Novak Djokovic and he said, look, it could have been easier, I've come through qualifying, I was so happy to be in qualifying. But yes, the party trick with a snake and his tongue, I actually think we're going to try and find a snake so he can show us the party trick.
A real snake?
A jelly snake. I thought it was. I said, I thought you were talking about a python. And he said, no, it's a jelly snake. So look out for it on our social media accounts. But we are actually going to find a snake and see if John Millman can do the party trick.
Right. OK, I'll look forward to that. Talking to people who've been talking to you at Media Day, Cameron Norrie?
Yes, Cameron Norrie, does he have a party trick? Can we call this a party trick? Maybe we can. Again, very relaxed. This is where he made his main tour debut last year. So he said, it's so nice to be back. I asked him how things have changed over the last year. And he said, well, I'm quite grounded. Nothing really has changed that much, but seems to be in a very, very happy place. And it was all about finding new things, hidden talents about some of the players. And I think we found another one in Cameron Norrie.
Queen's Invernal is just a very special tournament. Feels great to be back here on the grass, and it's just a great place to lead up to Wimbledon, and really excited to get out on the court. It's going to be my first time on centre court tomorrow, playing Rowinka, so it's going to be a great battle, and just to play another big dog, it's going to be very exciting for me, and really, really looking forward to it.
I was wondering about this. You turned professional last June. It's been a year now. How has life changed in that time?
I don't think mentally it's changed too much. I still want more and more and more. So managed to get into inside the top 100, which is great. Just finished uni like a year ago, so it's been pretty surreal for me. But it's been a great journey, and it's been very tough. I've had some ups and downs, but overall it's just very exciting for me, and it's just really want to see how far I can go and just see. See where I can go with tennis, and it's really, really enjoying it, and I'm happy and grateful to be playing tennis for a living.
Is it quite nice to have the studying behind you now?
I didn't actually graduate, so you need 4 years to graduate in the States, and I did 3 years, so I can go back for free whenever and get my degree and maybe do that one day, but for now I'll focus on my tennis, But it was nice to kind of get a little bit more balance in my life and have the studies to kind of offset the tennis and a little bit more socialising. But now it's all very serious and professional now, so I'm enjoying my life so far.
I didn't really think about that, but I guess with the studying, it was maybe quite a nice distraction away from the tennis sometimes.
For sure, it was a great balance for me. And then you have your whole team there as well, working out with you, practicing with you, so it's not all about you, and it's quite nice to bounce off your teammates, and you get real close to your teammates, so it's been a big change for me. I've been just travelling out here by myself. Luckily, I had one of my old teammates. He's my coach now, Faku Lagona, so it's been great that he's been able to come with me, and that it's been really good so far, mate.
Where would you say your favourite place that you visited in the last year has been, and why? Because the tennis tour goes to some amazing places.
Yeah, for sure. I think, funny enough, I went to Estoril, Portugal, and I loved it there. Stayed in a hotel right on the beach. I played well. I won the doubles there with Kyle. So overall, just a successful week. And I think it was a nice place in general. There's been some great places too, but for some reason, that week just stands out to me.
And definitely winning that doubles title. Now, this is going to be the tricky part. We're going to ask you to pick out a mixing stick,
okay,
read the question, and give us your best answer.
Okay. What can you do that would surprise people?
Can you speak a different language?
I can speak gibberish. Do you know what that is? It's like when you put like idigs in between syllables, so like only your friends can understand it.
So could you
be like hidigaladigo, midigai, nidigai, midigas, kidigam, ridigan, nidigar, ridigi.
What does that mean?
And like if you want to just talk about someone behind their back and they're sitting right there, you can just say it right in front of their face. Like, for example, I just said, hello, my name is Cameron Norrie. But it's just like another language that only my friends understood. So
you've got other people that do understand this language?
Yeah, all my teammates at college understood it, and all my mates back in New Zealand, we kind of understood it. And it's kind of bizarre, but I think there are other versions of it and people do know what I'm talking about. You're looking at me like, what are you talking about?
Do you sometimes slip into it but not even realising it? And people look at you a bit like I was then, thinking, what is this?
No, I'm not like just randomly blurting it out. But no, I think it is quite handy if you just want to talk about someone behind their back or something like that. But no,
I like
that's
that.
Big surprise.
Does your coach speak gibberish?
No, he speaks a Spanish version of it, actually. My coach is Argentinian. So
do you understand the Spanish? I'm just thinking, you know, you need to get sort of on-call coaching that I know it's not allowed, but if he wants to say something, get a message across to you, no one's going to understand.
I don't really understand Spanish anyway, so he's still trying to
It would
teach
be gibberish.
Yeah, exactly.
Blimey, I wasn't expecting that, Gigi.
Can you speak gibberish?
Many people would say so. They would say you're doing it right now. So, order of play, first day, Monday, Fever Tree Championships, what we got?
It's fabulous. We start with Denis Shapovalov, who was part of the draw, and it took place, and he said he's so excited to be out there against the big serving Gilles Muller. Then we've got Stan Wawrinka. So many question marks still about the fitness, the knee. Can he come back against the man who can speak gibberish in Cameron Norrie? Then Marin Cilic, who was also very, very relaxed in media day, talking about his wedding planning and his wife-to-be then put him in charge of food and music. He said he felt no pressure, and he was also only allowed in the tournament if he promised Stephen Farrow, the tournament director, that England would be his second team at the World Cup. He takes on Fernando Verdasco, and then Jay Clark, who we had a chat with, who was just so happy to be here, taking on Sam Querrey, another recently married man on tour.
And a man who won this title in 2010. We've also got Kyle Edmund and Neil Skupski playing in doubles against Grigor Dimitrov and Ryan Harrison on court one. Jamie Murray and Bruno Suarez are going to be out there playing doubles against Manarino and Martin, and Jack Sock against Daniil Medvedev. These are all court one matches, so that means that people who've got their grounds pass can get in and watch some really cool tennis. So it's all coming up. There are still some tickets on the door if you'd like to get them tomorrow and come and watch some of this amazing tennis on the centre court. But Gigi Salmon and myself, David Law, that's about it for us for the night. We're going to go and rest up. We'll be back tomorrow with another tennis podcast every night. I think this is probably my sole appearance, to be honest, Gigi, because I think Catherine is going to go barging in here after her work on Amazon Prime Video and covering and presenting this tournament. But she'll be back in position tomorrow. We can't wait for it. We hope you join us. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, and our executive producers, Melanie Bowes and Triple S, and of course, tennisballs.com, and our mascot. You didn't know this, did you, Gigi? We've got a mascot. It's Charlie the Ferret. We'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.